Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 275, Cuddling and Munching, Food for Thought, an update on German corporate control over the American media. This is being recorded on February 11th of the year 2001. We're going to begin by reviewing the back cover of the Nazi tract Serpent's Walk, put out by National Vanguard Books, and a book that I believe is far more than the novel it purports to be. This is put out by the same publisher that puts out the Turner Diaries, and I believe that just like the Turner Diaries, it is a blueprint for the Nazi faithful. The book is authored by one Randolph D. Calverhall and copyright 1991 by National Vanguard Books. It describes the SS going underground at the end of World War II, which in fact they did, building up, as part of the Bormann Flight Capital Organization, their economic power, which in fact they did, buying into the American opinion-forming media, and coming to control the United States and the world in the mid-21st century. The back cover describes the SS speaking. It assumes that Hitler's warrior elite, the SS, didn't give up their struggle for a white world when they lost the Second World War. Instead, their survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and, quote, equality, unquote. And of the process after the cuddling up and munching up of corporations, the passage in a discussion, or the book Serpent's Walk, in a discussion between two of the Nazi faithful, Lessing and Rentsch, describes the following. About 10 years ago, we swung a merger, a takeover, and got voting control of a super corporation that runs a small but significant chunk of the American media. And skipping down, one huge corporation cuddling up to another one and gently munching it up like a great gubbing amoeba. Since then, we've been replacing executives, pushing somebody out here, bringing somebody else in there. And note the following, skipping to the present, and reality, and I believe the book Serpent's Walk is far more than the novel it purports to be. I believe it's a blueprint. The Financial Times of Friday, February 2nd of the year 2001, has the following article by Leslie Crawford in Madrid and Richard Waters in New York. It's headlined, Davis Out in Lyko's Power Struggle. Subheaded, Internet. Share price suffers as investors question ability of company to marry U.S. and Spanish aims. Note the following. Terra Lycos, the world's third largest internet portal, appeared to turn its back on the U.S. yesterday after a power struggle that resulted in the departure of Bob Davis as chief executive and of Ted Philip as chief financial officer. And in an article by those same two authors that accompanies this, again from the Financial Times of Friday, February 2nd of the year 2001, this is an article by Richard Waters and Leslie Crawford titled, Spanish Win Internet Bust Up, subtitled, Balance of Power at Terra Lycos Moves Across Atlantic as U.S. CEO Quits. It reads in part, the odds of a happy transatlantic marriage in the executive suite at Terra Lycos never looked good. But a bust-up resulting in the resignation yesterday of Bob Davis as chief executive and the appointment of a new chief financial officer has come notably quickly. Skipping down, Mr. Davis seemed an unusual choice for a multicultural organization whose biggest presence was in Latin America. Unable to speak Spanish and lacking the veneer of an internationally experienced executive, he rubbed shoulders uncomfortably with his new masters, and with Thomas Middelhoff, the German head of Bertelsmann, whose company had thrown its weight behind the new Terra Lycos by promising it $1 billion in advertising revenues. We talked about the Terra Lycos deal in For the Record program number 242, entitled Dot Kameradschaft USA. So the cuddling up, the munching up, and the gentle pushing out and replacing of executives continues. One of the broadcasts that we took a look at considerable length in For the Record program number 241, one of the deals that we took a look at considerable length in For the Record program number 245 was the Deutsche Telekom purchase of VoiceStream based in Bellevue, Washington, and in turn VoiceStream's acquisition of PowerTel. We took a look at the FBI's objections to this and also the objections of members of Congress. We also updated that in For the Record program number 251. It should be borne in mind that mobile telephones are seen as, or so-called M-commerce, are seen as the next major vehicle in accessing the Internet, and so mobile phones are actually part of the media analysis that I'm dealing with in this ongoing series. Hence the inclusion of, For the Record, 245, Deutsche Telekom, Uber Alles, and a supplement, 251, to this discussion. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This is a Reuters story by Jeremy Polofsky, P-E-L-O-F-S-K-Y, from December 20th of the year 2000. It's titled, U.S. Works Out Security Issues with VoiceStream and Deutsche Telekom. And the article reads in part, U.S. law enforcement authorities are working to address national security concerns about acquisitions of VoiceStream Wireless Corporation and PowerTel Incorporated by Deutsche Telekom AG, which is partially owned by the German government. The Federal Bureau of Investigation and the companies filed a joint petition made available on Tuesday asking the Federal Communications Commission, which has to determine whether the combinations are in the public interest, to hold off ruling until the parties reach an agreement. VoiceStream, based in Bellevue, Washington, agreed to be acquired by the German telecommunications giant earlier this year in a $34 billion deal. VoiceStream also agreed to acquire PowerTel for about $6 billion in August. Law enforcement agencies, quote, have concerns that the merger could, absent an appropriate agreement, impair the ability of authorized governmental agencies in the U.S. to satisfy their obligations to preserve the national security, enforce the laws, and protect the public, unquote, according to the petition. Germany's 44% stake in Deutsche Telekom, which the government has pledged to divest, has raised concerns among some in U.S. Congress about the impact the German government backing could have on competition and on U.S. national security. I would add that their promise to reduce the German government's equity to 25% is, as we looked at in For the Record Program 245, something of a misdirection play in that, first of all, the shares of Deutsche Telekom are grossly overvalued, and so bearing in mind the Bertelsmann deal that we looked at inside A of this particular program, in which they are now going to go public, the use of equity in order to acquire a greater amount of capital is front and center in the Deutsche Telekom deal. Note also that there are national security concerns here. In For the Record Program 272, we took a look at some of the frightening potential implications of allowing foreign corporations, including German corporations, to control aspects of U.S. national security. And in the numerous broadcasts dealing with the Oklahoma City bombing, we took a look at the testimony of Carol Howe, an ATF informant, who passed a polygraph examination on her testimony that, first of all, the mastermind of the Oklahoma City bombing was Andreas Strassmeyer, and that Timothy McVeigh was his protege. And we also took a look at the fact that Andreas Strassmeyer was Helmut Kohl's former chief of staff and the architect of German reunification. And in accessing information from Martin A. Lee's landmark text, The Beast Reawakens, we took a look at the fact that Gunter Strassmeyer's father, Andreas's grandfather, was one of the charter members of the Nazi Party in Germany under Adolf Hitler. Bear that in mind. Bear in mind also that the U.S. Trade Representative is Robert Zoellick, who handled the reunification of Germany for the James Baker and George Bush State Department. Zoellick is a board member and fellow with the German Marshall Fund of the United States, as we took a look at in For the Record program number 273, B as in Bush, B as in Bormann, and that is in effect a German front company. I would also note that he must necessarily have coordinated with Gunter Strassmeyer, Helmut Kohl's chief of staff. Bear in mind that Helmut Kohl is a member, the principal member. He served as chancellor for the CDU. Keep that in mind as you listen to a recapitulation of information about the treasurer of the CDU and some of what he's up to these days. Bear in mind also that the head of the International Monetary Fund right now is Horst Kohler, who was the architect of German economic reunification. We took a look at that in For the Record programs 200 and 215. We're going to take a look now, or actually we're going to take a listen now, to an excerpt from For the Record program number 245. This is titled, again, Deutsche Telekom über alles, and it's about the Deutsche Telekom deal. And we're going to take a look at the law firm that is handling the lobbying on behalf of the Deutsche Telekom purchase of VoiceStream and PowerTel, and take note of the fact that a former German transport minister, Matthias Wissmann, is a partner with that law firm, and that Matthias Wissmann is the treasurer of the CDU. In an update to For the Record program number 193 that will be coming up probably next week, we're going to take a look at overlaps between the CDU funding scandal and a number of other programs and update the CDU funding scandal. Bear in mind that Matthias Wissmann is the treasurer of the CDU. Bear in mind that the French oil giant ELF is front and center in the CDU finance scandal, funding scandal. We took a look at that in For the Record program 193, and we're going to update that. And inside A, we took a look at the fact that Mr. Frère of the Belgian firm GBL that was front and center in the deal that Bertelsmann swung in order to acquire equity by being or swung through equity in order to be publicly traded and expand its economic reach, although Bertelsmann and the Mohn family will still control that. Bear in mind that Mr. Frère's, Albert Frère's, one of his major investments for GBL was Totalfina ELF. So we see an awful lot of different lines of inquiry in this program beginning to merge in a big, big way or overlap. Actually, it's one line of inquiry with many different tributaries. We're going to listen to an excerpt now from For the Record program number 245, Deutsche Telekom über alles, recorded in the late summer of the year 2000, and in turn, For the Record program number 139 is going to be excerpted in the excerpt that you're about to listen to. It's also worth taking a noting here what law firm is being selected by Deutsche Telekom to lobby its position in Washington. This is from the Wall Street Journal of Friday, July 21st of the year 2000. This is an article by Wall Street Journal staff reporters William Boston in Bonn and Jill Carroll in Washington. It's headlined, Deutsche Telekom lobbies but mildly in Washington. And skipping down, only recently did the company hire a law firm with a swagger to open doors in D.C., signing up Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering to represent it. Skipping down. Mr. Zummer has said of this, the purchase of VoiceStream, we are not coming as invaders, he said in a telephone interview yesterday. I would say that is open to debate. And skipping down again, Democratic Senator Ernest F. Hollings of South Carolina is urging the Federal Communications Commission to block any acquisition by Deutsche Telekom, which he calls, quote, a monopoly owned by the German government that operates from a protected home market, unquote. And skipping down again, if Deutsche Telekom is biding its time, the same can't be said for the German government. Alerted by a stern warning letter from the German ambassador in Washington last week, senior German foreign ministry and economics ministry officials have had talks about the Hollings letter and Deutsche Telekom with their counterparts at the State Department and the FCC, according to Berlin officials. Now, note again that the law firm of Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering has been signed to handle the lobbying for Deutsche Telekom's position in Washington. We spoke about Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering in For the Record program number 139, and Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering in turn had signed a German government minister as a partner, and Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering has been involved in some very interesting activities indeed. That former German transport minister is named Matthias Wissmann, and we're going to excerpt For the Record program number 139 in order to hear more not only about Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering and its signing on a former German cabinet minister as a partner, but also some of the previous cases that Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering has handled on behalf of German industry. This again is excerpted from For the Record program number 139. Again, this from the Financial Times of London of 3-2-1999. This is an article headlined, Wissmann Joins Washington Firm. Matthias Wissmann, W-I-S-S-M-A-N-N, the treasurer of Germany's CDU opposition party and a former transport minister, has become a partner of the Washington law firm of Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering
in one of the most dramatic attempts yet by U.S. lawyers to export their regulatory expertise to Europe. The firm is best known in Europe for its role in representing the Swiss banks when they were sued in the U.S. over their alleged confiscation of assets belonging to Holocaust survivors. It is now working for several German companies being sued over their use of slave labor during the Second World War. By the way, the CDU party is the party that was in power for some 16 years. Helmut Kohl is a member of the CDU-CSU coalition. And so please note this is a very, very significant figure for Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering to be taking on. And again, he's a former transport minister of Germany. And note that this company is now working for several German, this law firm, I should say, is now working for several German companies being sued over their use of slave labor during the Second World War. Skipping down. Senior lawyers at Wilmer Cutler believe it, beginning again, senior lawyers at Wilmer Cutler make it clear they believe Europe could be a big market for them, pointing to the lead that Brussels is already taking in privacy issues and to the difficulty some U.S. mergers have had in gaining EU clearance. That again is excerpted from For the Record program number 139 from the early spring of 1999. So note again the role of Matthias Wissmann as a partner with Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering, and the fact that that firm had handled lawsuits against Swiss banks for confiscating assets of Holocaust victims. Many of those Swiss banks tied in with the Bormann Group, as we've looked at in numerous broadcasts. They also are handling the slave labor lawsuits for several major German corporations.
That again from For the Record program number 245, Deutsche Telekom, Uber Alles. Inside A of For the Record program 275, we took a look at the publication by Piper Verlag of a book which basically, by the way, that's a Bertelsmann subsidiary, of a book that charges that the Holocaust had become basically an out-and-out extortion racket and that basically an American Jewish elite, unquote, had appropriated the Holocaust. And again, that's not to say that the major American transnationals were not pivotally involved in the Third Reich. As I've said so many times before, they bear a significant share of the guilt for the Third Reich. But rather, I think we are to take a look at that very interesting spin on the Holocaust by the author of that book, and to take a look at perhaps whether there may be another type of flat-out extortion racket involved here. And I don't necessarily want to be misunderstood as impugning the motives of some of the people involved here, but let's take a look at some very, very interesting strategic analysis of what is going on. First of all, this is from the San Francisco Chronicle from today, today being Sunday, February 11th of the year 2001, article by Barnaby J. Feder, F-E-D-E-R, of the New York Times, it's Dateline New York, and headlined, Lawsuit Says IBM Helped Nazis. Subtitled, Firm Called Liable for the Way Equipment Used. And skipping down, we read, Lawyers who have represented victims of Nazi oppression in successful lawsuits against European banks, insurers, and manufacturing companies over the past 5 years have turned their sights to American executives of IBM. In a lawsuit filed yesterday in U.S. District Court in Brooklyn, the lawyers contend that IBM, the world's largest computer company, shares responsibility for the way the Third Reich used its data processing technology. The lawsuit says IBM supplied technology it knew would be used to facilitate persecution and genocide, unquote. The lawsuit was timed to coincide with the release tomorrow of a book, which the lawyers declined to identify, that explores IBM's links to the Nazi regime. The lawyers acknowledge that public relations strategies have been as important as legal arguments in their Holocaust suits and that to date, they have negotiated settlements totaling over $7 billion without winning a judgment. Note again the law firm that was handling the Swiss Holocaust Swiss Holocaust lawsuits on behalf of Swiss banks, Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering, and also the accounts of German corporations being sued for their slave labor during World War II. Note that young Germans have expressed, some of them anyway, admiration for the Third Reich's employment policies. Again, a classic example of be careful what you wish for, you may get it. And I would also note that the law firm of Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering has, as we looked at, been handling the lobbying on behalf of the Deutsche Telekom purchase of PowerTel and VoiceStream. And note that CDU Treasurer Matthias Wissmann is now a partner with Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering, and that one of the considerations was the access of EU's, the European Union, to American corporations. Note that the EU helped put the whammy on the WorldCom Sprint deal, as we looked at in For the Record 245, and that the EU put the whammy on the Time Warner EMI deal, and EMI is now a takeover target of Bertelsmann, as we looked at in, among other broadcasts, 274, the last program, last update in this particular series. Now, bear in mind that the lawsuit against IBM, and this is not in any way to pass to exonerate IBM for what they apparently did. I didn't even know IBM existed. I thought it at this time. I thought it came into being in the early 50s, but that's how we get educated. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from The Register, a British newspaper. And this particular article is by Thomas C. Green. It's titled IBM Implicated in Nazi Extermination of Jews, and this is from February 11th of the year 2001. We're going to identify this particular book. And skipping to, by the way, the book is authored by Edwin Black. The article reads in part, writer Edwin Black claims to have roughly 20,000 pages of documentation proving that American as apple pie tech behemoth IBM embraced and advanced the twisted dreams of Der Fuhrer by supplying crucial technology to the Nazis in a book entitled IBM and the Holocaust. Hundreds of thousands of human beings were being identified, sorted, assigned, and transported by means of IBM's card system, unquote, Black says. Hitler's perverse ambitions were greatly enhanced and energized by the ingenuity of IBM and Thomas J. Watson, its autocratic chairman, unquote. Virtually all the logistics of the Nazi rat bastard program, that's the verbiage of the article, certainly the most celebrated, if not the most expensive, of mankind's frequent genocidal enterprises can be credited to IBM technology, we are told. Quote, IBM did not invent Germany's anti-Semitism, but when Germany wanted to identify Jews by name, IBM showed it how. When the Reich wanted to use that information to launch programs of social expulsion and expropriation, IBM provided the means. When the trains had to run on time between concentration camps, IBM offered the solution, unquote. By the way, I would add that one of the reasons why having Deutsche Telekom monitoring U.S. Wireless communications, and with the impending impact of wireless phones, cell phones, on accessing the Internet, and also with the Bertelsmann, in effect, acquisition of the Napster company with its peer-to-peer technology, I would think about perhaps a German-to-American rerun of this same relationship here. And continuing with this article, even as late as 1945, Black says, IBM execs in the U.S. were in constant touch with their Nazi partners, smoothing over the odds and ends of a business alliance which had by that time been illegal for years. In Uncle Sam and the Swastika, we took a look at the U.S. industrial connections to the Third Reich and their perpetuation before, during, and after the war, their conduct before, during, and after the war. Now, in this article, not the previous one, but in this article, we're going to take a look now at the company that is publishing this particular book by Edwin Black. And again, some of my analysis of the maneuvering here should not in any way be endorsed as misinterpreted as an endorsement for what IBM allegedly did here. And again, this is news to me. I didn't even know the company existed at this time, but that's how we educate ourselves. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from the New York Daily News of February 10th of the year 2001. This is by Paul D. Culford, the Daily News business writer. It's titled, Book Links IBM to Hitler, and it reads in part as follows. A tightly guarded book to go on sale Monday will allege that IBM, now the world's sixth largest company, had ties to the Third Reich and a role in carrying out Adolf Hitler's extermination of the Jews. The book was written by Edwin Black, who previously wrote The Transfer Agreement, The Untold Story of the Secret Agreement Between the Third Reich and Jewish Palestine. Skipping down, the book will be released simultaneously in the United States by Crown Publishers in more than 40 other countries, although it's not in Crown's catalog. New York area retailers have ordered it based on only a few details provided by sales representatives. And skipping down, Crown is a division of Random House, which is owned by Bertelsmann, the German media giant. So one wonders, first of all, it'll be interesting to see what damage, if any, that does to IBM. One wonders also whether perhaps the deep culpability of U.S. corporations in the Third Reich and in the Holocaust, and again, I don't think there's anybody who's done more work on that culpability than yours truly, one wonders whether perhaps the extortion racket is going in the opposite direction. In other words, if U.S. corporations want access to the European market, maybe they have to play ball. And again, note the role of the EU in helping to deep six the WorldCom Sprint deal and Time Warner EMI deal. And note also Bertelsmann's publication of this particular book. Perhaps there is an extortion racket, but maybe it's going the other way. More about Bertelsmann's growth. This from the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, December 19th of the year 2000. This is a Bloomberg News story by Julia Werdiger. It's headlined, German Firm to Buy Fast Company Magazine. It's Dateline Hamburg and reads in part, Gruner & Jahr AG, publisher of Parents, Child, and Family Circle, agreed to buy Fast Company magazine owned by Mortimer B. Zuckerman for as much as $490 million, the Wall Street Journal said on its website, citing people familiar with the situation. Skipping down. The purchase would make Gruner & Jahr, which publishes more than 80 magazines worldwide, a rival to publishers of business magazines such as Time Incorporated, which publishes Fortune and E Company Now. And note also in that context the following. This is from the New York Times of January 17th of the year 2001. It's by Alex Kuczynski. And this also deals with Gruner & Jahr and the Bertelsmann magazine division. This is headlined, Publisher Set to Step Down at New Yorker. And about the growth of Gruner & Jahr's business publications, we read, in a move that is almost certain to rattle the Condé Nast magazine group and help establish another magazine company as a more significant player, David Carey, the president and publisher of The New Yorker, is expected to announce his resignation from Condé Nast today. Mr. Carey will become the president and chief executive of a newly formed business magazine group that Gruner & Jahr hopes will challenge the field of business magazines that includes Fortune, Forbes, and Business Week, according to executives at Gruner & Jahr and Condé Nast. Under its chief executive, Daniel B. Brewster, Gruner & Jahr recently bought the magazines Fast Company and Inc. and is aiming to buy other business magazines. And still more about Bertelsmann's growth. This from the New York Times of Thursday, January 4th of the year 2001, article by David D. Kirkpatrick, headlined, Digital Book Turf Battle Escalates Over Royalties. Escalating a turf war over the nascent business of selling digital books, the online bookseller BarnesandNoble.com is expanding its role as a digital publisher, setting a new royalty rate intended to attract authors and publishing an original digital book by the best-selling writer Dean Koontz. Bear in mind that BarnesandNoble.com is 50% owned by Bertelsmann. For an annotated description of For the Record program number 275, visit the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. That concludes For the Record program number 275. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.